Brandon Vogel has reconsidered joining this party this morning. Vogues, how we doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
We're all right.
Have you ever loved a woman so just kidding. I'm not going to ask you this question.
Vogue's just going to get up, push his chair in, and just kindly walk to the kitchen.
I can say personally, like from my experience, no, I haven't. Right?
There's a lot of coordination that has to happen with that whole thing anyways. Like one,
you thought about
it? Two, it has to create bubbles. I'm just thinking about it now. Like it just, I'd never pondered it before, but like there's logistics involved here
that are just like now.
You got to think about what you're feeding her a few hours before. It's a whole thing. So, Brandon, we were starting talking about just random
beer,
sparkling water. Do you partake? Do you not partake?
I do partake. I don't. It's a weird thing. Like, I don't feel like I particularly like any of the flavors of La Croix, but I'll drink them because, like, they're around. Spindrift, the half tea, half lemonade, is probably the best one.
There you go.
But it's also, like, more expensive than La Croix. So, but the real treat I found is Topo Chico. I'm a Topo Chico chick. I feel like it's aggressively carbonated. Which is the thing. It's just like you want something to drink, but you know, you're not gonna have a beer or you're not gonna have a soda if you drink soda or whatever it is. That one's got some intrigue because of the amount of bubbles, I think.
It's impossible not to burp too. That's the other thing. You put it down, you're just like, it's good. Something refreshing about that. Yeah. Anyways. I have no idea why we started going here, but we just did.
I'll say the same thing. It just needs more flavor. The LaCroix and the Topo Chicos of the world, they just need more flavor. That's the thing to me.
Fair.
You ever had a ranch water? Lubbock's greatest cocktail?
I have had a ranch water.
Yeah.
What are those?
Basically tequila, lime, and Topo Chico.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
Those are tasty. And I was concerned whenever I first saw the cans, because they sell them in cans. And being a Midwesterner, that was not the type of ranch I was thinking of. When I saw ranch water, I'm like, this could be horrible. And then I read the fine print. I'm like, oh, this is not the kind of ranch water I was thinking. But
it's hard to find the Hidden Valley ranch water. That's limited markets at this point.
Yeah, a little coagulation.
But they probably exist.
Yeah.
Vogues, let's talk some football. And I know Aaron had a really good story yesterday with Counter Reed. And bi-weekly is where you can get on top of some other updates from your friends at Counter Reed, counterreed.com. But let's focus in, zero in here on some recruiting before we talk spring football. And Nebraska's been after it. They've been pretty aggressive with who they've been bringing in, and they're getting kids to come in on their own dime. What do you think of Matt Rhule in spring number two with his recruiting approach?
Yeah, they've been aggressive. That said, I think so. This is your big chance in terms of a coaching regime, I think, is this recruiting period right now. Like, you get through year one goes how it goes. Nobody, like, Nebraska went 5-7, as we all know, but you're still selling like momentum. Everything's trending up. This is going to be the place to be for your future. So you've really got to make some hay, I think, with this second recruiting cycle. Anytime you start over under a new head coach, and you know, Nebraska doesn't have the commits yet that some of the others in the Big Ten do, but to your point, Chris, they're getting people on campus. They're getting people on campus multiple times. Nebraska being a little bit later in terms of the spring game, I think, helps with that to a degree. And I think one other interesting thing about this is like, Nebraska's out there. It's making some big offers, but I don't feel like it's totally – it doesn't have a home run swing every time. They haven't gotten outside of, I think, what they do successfully in terms of recruiting. And that can sometimes be a temptation because you're like, well, this is our time to move. This is our time to go. So let's swing for the fences every time out.
Brandon Vogel with us, weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Cornhead Lager. Let's switch to running backs real quick. Why is Emmett Johnson like the Rodney Dangerfield of the running back room? why doesn't he get his flowers? Why do people not count him as a bona fide starting back?
Maybe because Nebraska had three chances to get one win to be bowl eligible and didn't, and that was the bulk of kind of his time as the featured back. I really think that's kind of a big piece of it is, you know, during those games, I remember specifically over the back half of the season, like feeling pretty good about him. Like he runs hard, you know, for a young player, seemed to have pretty decent vision, you know, which can be the hard thing with those younger guys, like the holes that they were used to seeing or may have seen as a star high school back close up a lot more quickly here. So I think that is my best theory, because when you go back and watch some of what he did specifically, I think he had a pretty strong close to the year. He had a strong close, strong enough that, you know, you look at him and think, oh, bigger things are ahead for him in 2024. I also think it's a little bit of, you know, two guys who have been at Nebraska for a long time now, and Ramir Johnson and Gabe Irvin, aren't really available. You don't know, like, how they factor into the picture. So I think a little bit of the murkiness of the running back room as a whole probably pulls down, like, enthusiasm for Johnson a little bit, too.
Sorry, Chris, real quick.
Go for it.
I think that's fair. I think that's probably why it's almost like victim of circumstance in terms of like, it just feels like people overlook him. But as a player, how would you, I would evaluate him as, I think he's got legitimate breakaway speed. I don't think he's been able to show it quite yet. But I think he really can pull away from guys. And he doesn't fumble. And he just, you know, I'm not saying, I don't think he's necessarily Heisman potential, but he seems like a really quality back that you can build around for a few years. I'm just wondering how you evaluate him as a player.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I felt this way about Gabe Irvin, like early on too, when he was kind of lead back at the start of the year. The issue with him has been just, he's struggled to stay injury free. Emmett Johnson, though, beyond that, I think, like, he's the kind of back that they want for this, because I agree with you. I think the speed is there, even if we didn't get to see it totally in 2023. But mostly, like, it never seemed like too big an ask for him. And at the end of the last year, you know, Nebraska was running the football a ton. It wasn't having a ton of success doing it, but it stuck with it because it knew it was that was their best chance to win versus putting the ball in the air a little bit more often. And Emma Johnson was up for it. So, you know, we'll see. Like, it reminds me of like that, the early stage of Amir Abdullah a little bit. It was just like, yeah, the guy's just up for it. I'm not saying he'll be that kind of player. If he becomes that kind of player, then yeah, Nebraska's set for the next 3 years. But I got hints of that in terms of just like, yep, give me the ball, I'll do what you need.
But on the flip side of things, I think a reason why he might not be anointed yet as the starting running back or the guy of the future is like, it's optically, he starts the year down on the depth chart. He's behind guys like, I mean, two guys that are hurting, Ramir Johnson and Gabe Irvin. He's behind Anthony Grant, who couldn't hold on to the football last year. He's still behind those guys. And he asked the question why, and then he doesn't come in and impress. Like, you have a guy in Divine Azigbo back in 2019 who came in and really impressed, and you went, okay, this dude was a dude that, even though he was third string, I don't think you got that kind of impressive, just like wow moment from Emmett Johnson last year. You had some solid moments, but you look at Nebraska going into the portal and going and getting a guy in Dowdell, and it makes you go, okay, is the coaching staff not seeing Emmett Johnson as a starting running back? Like, body wise, doesn't quite look like a Big Ten running back. I'm not saying that he can't be your starting running back. I just think you were waiting for a guy last year to take that mantle. I'm not sure he took the mantle. He was the best among the guys they had in that room. But no, he ever had that moment where you said, okay, that's your guy.
And as it kind of laid out,
he's got it's not his fault that he's 5'11" and 180 pounds. Like, those are things he has to overcome being a guy like that in the Big Ten. Not saying he can't do it. It's just there's things he has to overcome.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think, you know, maybe that's part of the reason too. I got a little bit of Amir Abdullah off of him. You know, his freshman year, he came in a super crowded class, and primarily was, you know, flashed on special teams. And it wasn't until Rex Burkhead, you know, suffered an injury, unfortunately for Nebraska at the time, that it was like, okay, you know, he didn't beat out Rex Burkhead, but he ended up, you know, I think he ended up rushing for 1,000 yards that first season he became their featured back. So, yeah, I think I get what you're saying, Elijah.
Bogues, to kind of put a bow on Johnson, Emmett's a guy that has always been a bit of an underdog, a find, even though he is Mr. Football. I think we saw the athleticism as a contestant in the dunk contest. That's the thing that Rule highlights all the time, is his, you know, his burst, his athleticism. I mean, the guy's a specimen as an athlete. Why? I want to go into the why for a moment. He had some breakaway runs. Like, I mean, Rule's highlighted the Purdue game, and help me out here. Was it Maryland? It was Purdue and Maryland where he had 2 20-plus-yard runs. One, he took it to the house to seal the deal against Purdue. But when Nebraska got down to it and they're putting a final drive together, they were in the red zone and they were throwing the football, not running the football. Is that a preference thing with Sat in the offense, or was it a lack of trust in the running back room thing? If you had to speculate and lean one way or the other, that's my question. Because you've got presumably better arms / decision makers now with whoever wins this quarterback race. But when push comes to shove, you still want to just kind of slam it down somebody's throat, I would think, in that red zone. You don't want to have to throw the football to score touchdowns, I don't think, in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's a curious one, because, you know, and that might be one where if things had been a little bit different and Emmett Johnson had been a bigger part of things early on, maybe you have a little bit more willingness to be like, let's just smash this thing in if we can, with a guy who's run hard all season. Whereas, you know, by the time you get to Maryland, he's still kind of your guy by default due to injury. As we've talked about, I think he was showing a lot of promise there. But it's also, you go back to that interception against Maryland. It's almost the exact same play as against Minnesota to start the season. So, which is, you know, kind of fascinating in its own right. Like, clearly they thought they had something, and he had two different quarterbacks throw kind of two different interceptions on a very similar play. So it might've just been a little like, this was here, you know, 8, 9, 10 weeks ago, whatever it was, we're going to go back to it with a different QB. And unfortunately they got the same result.
Yeah. The further you get away from last season and thinking back to it, you're just like, God, I mean, Nebraska easily should have more wins. It's just, you know, especially being, I'm telling you, the Minnesota game, being in person for that, it was so clear that Nebraska was the more dominant team at, like, player for player, pound for pound, absolutely the better team. But God, just fumbled the whole damn thing away. Now,
drink of your bubbly water. Relax.
It's just, you know, and same with the Colorado game, like Nebraska was doing pretty well and they finally just ran out of gas late, but it's just the fumbles are just absolutely ridiculous. Like, just get it to normal level. You don't even need to be great at holding onto the ball, just serviceable. And you probably win 3 or 4 more. Staying at the running back spot, should we have a level of concern there? Only because, we just went through Emmett Johnson. He stayed relatively healthy. He seems, at the very least, dependable. Beyond him, Gabe Irvin, listen, this isn't against him, but it's just the guy can't stay on the field. He's been hurt so much. Yep. Ramirez had kind of a similar situation. If Ramirez can be healthy, I think you have a game changer for Nebraska this year. He, mentality wise, that guy's exactly what you want. Speed wise, he's exactly what you want. Toughness, all that. Like, he's love how he plays, but he can't stay on the field. Dowdell is trying to, make his transition. Quentin Ives just never really got a snap. Are we talking enough about maybe concern at the running back spot? Like, as you just kind of tick through who they have available?
I think so. I think it's dicey. And it's been interesting. Rule mentions Quentin Ives a lot and talks a lot about his talent and ability. Like, I'm not sure exactly what it was that kind of has kept him off the field to this point, because he certainly could have been a guy that, you know, if you were – you want to keep his red shirt if you would absolutely can. It's just been – it's kind of been a little both sides every time I think Ives comes up. Mm-hmm. Now he's already redshirted, so it's like it's go time for him. Dowdell, you know, we'll see. Like, it's been a little bit quiet around him. And I mean, you just look at, they're running three fields. Like, there are walk-ons that are getting a lot of opportunities there, which isn't a bad thing. But the portal opens next week. Running backs the spot. It's going to be interesting for Nebraska, because they're still going to have basically 2 weeks of practice when that thing opens to get through. I wouldn't be surprised if running back, it's kind of the one spot I go into next week when the portal opens, thinking, yeah, I could see Nebraska like poking around here a little bit, because I mean, Rule told us this week, like, kind of the breakdown. They want to play three backs, you know, 20 carries mm-hmm. for your top guy, 12 for your next option. And then presumably that leaves like eight or something like that for your third guy. You're going to get injuries there. Like, how many guys do you need that are ready to go to get to, yep, we can run our three backs and divvy up the carries we want. Probably five scholarship guys. So I think Irvin's a key piece of this. I agree with you on Ramir Johnson. Rule was pretty effusive about him this week as well. So we'll see. Like, it's kind of a, I think, like I said, it's dicey, I think is the best way to put it.
Well, Brandon, in an ideal world, the Matt Rule, Marcus Satterfield, even Glenn Thomas offense, I think uses the run to set up the pass. And my question to you is, if they can't do that, how does that change the 2024 season? If they have to flip it around, if they have to turn to a freshman quarterback and use the pass to open up the run, how does that change what the offense looks like? Obviously, with a lot of question marks about what the offense is even going to be, we don't really know what the Glenn Thomas impact is going to be. But if they are an offense in the Big Ten that uses the pass to set up the run, how is that different than an offense that uses the run to set up the pass?
I mean, depends on how good that quarterback is. Like, I mean, if you can complete, you know, short to medium throws on first and second down, which Nebraska wasn't great at a year ago, which is kind of why, especially as you got into Big Ten play, I think they kept, you know, handing the ball off. And a lot of times it felt like chipping away at a cinder block wall. But, you know, I think it was kind of their best way forward. If you can open things up a little bit and complete some of those passes consistently, if you can be a threat as a thrower at quarterback, which, you know, might be the simplest way to look at what Nebraska didn't totally have last year. And some of that had to do with injuries at wide receivers too. But, you know, if it's first and 10 and opposing defense is facing Nebraska 2023, like, you could load the box up and be like, well, let's make Sims, Harburg, or Purdy, whoever happened to be in, you know, make this throw. Because every defense is going to just live with certain pieces of it. And the quarterbacks Nebraska played last year, I don't think, were consistent enough to just take those pieces of it. So if you've got a quarterback that can do that this year, well, then, yeah, you can. I mean, and I think if you have that, it doesn't even necessarily diminish the number of carries the Nebraska offense wants to have. It would just look a lot more efficient, and you'd average more than 18 points a game.
Vogues, let's talk about some of the development going on. And we hit on this a little bit yesterday, but is in response to Adam Rittenberg's story on the time he caught up with Rule this week. And we saw Rittenberg at Thursday's availability. And I wanted to get your take and response on the advice that Rule threw out there. Treat them all like fourth rounders, right? Don't be mad at the first rounder that's playing like a fourth rounder. And remember, they're all fourth rounders. Treat them all the same. Do you like Nebraska's approach with the quarterback race this spring?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Rule, I think I've heard him say that someplace else previously. So it's not, you know, it's something that I think he actually takes to heart, because we've heard it multiple times. You know, reading that story, which is pretty brief, I actually thought of Mark first, because one of the things Rule mentioned in there was Dylan Raiola's ability to stand in there and like get roughed up a little bit, and just kind of talking about how important that is for any quarterback in Big Ten play. But, you know, Nebraska, from the coaching staff on down to when you talk to the players, I think this spring, they've been very careful to like be totally quarterback inclusive. Like they're not really going to talk about one guy more than the other. Maybe that's why this Raiola piece was so short, is because Rule's just not really going to go there a whole lot. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting. Like, Nebraska has a big scrimmage today. We'll see what the football video department chooses to share with us. But I mean, I think I've seen impressive things from both of the freshmen in, you know, the kind of little snippets we get, which seems kind of silly to even talk about, but it's what you have.
Brendan, as we turn our attention to the scrimmage that's going to be occurring today down at Memorial Stadium, let's say that Brandon Vogel gets a special all-access pass. You're the only member of the media that gets to come down and watch this scrimmage. If that was the case, what is the number one thing that Brandon Vogel would be trying to glean from this scrimmage? What's the number one piece of information you'd want to come out of with?
Ooh. Probably the relationship you can intuit between the quarterbacks and the receivers, which might be kind of hard. You know, they're going to run all three guys in there. Goes a little bit, Elijah, to your question and point about, hey, if we're uncertain about the running backs and the running back room right now, how important is it? Like, if the offense has to flip a little bit, which, you know, Satterfield said a couple of weeks ago too, they need to be able to throw the ball better, if not more. I think it's still the biggest. Nebraska, I think, is better off, is more talented in the quarterback room right now than it is in the running back room. That said, it's greener, much greener. Well, maybe not much. It's greener. I still think it's the biggest question. It's the biggest kind of missing brick in terms of how high Nebraska's ceiling might be in 2024. What kind of quarterback player you're going to get?
Offensive line wise, I think four of your five starters are locked. Want to see if you agree and want to get your take on the fifth. So it appears Prochaska's got left tackle, Bennert's got right tackle, Mazuka probably gets right or left guard, and then Ben Scott at center. So that leaves that one guard spot where you got Litovsky, you got Sledge, you have Justin Evans Jenkins. You just have options. Corcoran, if he slides in. Any idea? Do you agree that that's your four of your five? And then who do you think's that fifth?
Yeah, I think that those four seem pretty good to me. Carroll Jackson might be 1A on that list, and Litovsky might be 1B. Those are the first two that come to mind to me. Carroll Jackson, I thought, in kind of extreme circumstances, came in and handled himself pretty well for a young player. We've also seen, you know, I think he's got a pretty good reputation amongst his teammates, which is important too, particularly on the offensive line. So I think those would be the top two for that fifth starter. And then, you know, you're looking at Nebraska, I think, for the first time in a while, you know, having some actual depth there, which of course is key.
Bogues, last thought from you before we get into some counter read stuff. Pretty interesting story with AD Troy Dannon, an eat what you kill mentality. He foresees that could be a model things shift to in the world of college sports. So not only from a Big Ten conference standpoint, you've got equal revenue distribution. right now, Ohio State and Michigan, Nebraska, they earn a bunch of money. Northwestern does not, just as an example. And do you think that's the direction things are moving? I mean, we hear about it with Florida State and Clemson. That's why they won out of the ACC. It's not that they hate the league. It's that they hate they make less than a Big 12 fifth place, eighth place team. So do you think that is where things are navigating?
I guess I'd be surprised to see that happen, but not totally. It makes sense in the ACC because Clemson and Florida State are trying to get out, like, obviously. And part of the way for them to force that to the degree that they can, I don't know that they're going to be successful, is to, you know, say, well, we need a bigger share of the revenue pie because we're bringing a ton of value. Mm-hmm. When Nebraska went to the Big Ten and kind of that round of conference realignment, it's kind of when we got away from that. It was like, oh, you know, TV's everywhere, like the Big Ten network's out there. It's a cash cow. Let's band together. We can all go, you know, we can all split this revenue equally and we'll all make a ton of it. Well, TV has changed a lot since then. This feels kind of like the high watermark, I think, for kind of revenue for these massive TV deals, like just with the changes. I mean, ESPN's struggling. It doesn't quite know what its future model is, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't know if we can guarantee that the Big Ten and the SEC, even the two most solid, most marketable properties in college football, I don't know that we can guarantee that their next TV deal, which is, you know, I still think like 8-9 years away, is bigger than the previous one. And you always assume that. I mean, we're kind of seeing it play out with the NBA right now. Are they going to get the money that they used to get? So yeah. If that changes, then yeah, I think you could start to see the Ohio States of the world, Nebraska, saying, well, look, Northwestern is for the next 2 years playing its home football games on the soccer field.
Looks cool though. Looks beautiful.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, it has real implications. Like, I think Scott Docterman wrote that story for The Athletic talking about, you know, what that means in terms of revenue from just splitting the gate. And Northwestern is going to be at the lowest level that you can be at, which makes sense. They're updating their stadium. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a big change for where college football has been recently. But if you tell me 10 years from now, that's what Nebraska, Ohio State, Michigan, et cetera, are pushing for, I guess I wouldn't be totally shocked.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Is Nebraska – sorry, this is a random question. Nebraska's not going to get a chance to play Northwestern on their soccer field, are they? I don't think they have at Northwestern the next two seasons, which is – unfortunate. I was kind of hoping for a Hail Varsity Radio boat show from Lake Michigan.
I think that would rock.
Like, on the boat, we can see the field. We can see the team warming up from the shore. I think that would have been a great Hail Varsity show, but it's not going to be possible because Nebraska hosts
Northwestern. We can do a boat show whenever Nebraska plays at Washington, because that was popular. Cranack, you were out in Washington, I think, a couple times for Nebraska-Washington games.
Back in the day, yep.
And if Nebraska keeps this Tennessee game, there's is it the Tennessee River that's right by –
that's where they tossed the goalposts, wasn't it, after they beat Bama? Okay.
I don't know.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Both of those locales, Elijah, you can do barge shows.
There are people – I'm in Chattanooga. There are people who take boats from Chattanooga to Knoxville. Like, look that up on a map. It's not short. Leave on a Friday, get there Saturday for game day. I haven't found anybody to take me on one of those boats yet, but I definitely want to.
Well, we
could do that on Salt Creek, couldn't we?
For 2034, so we can make it happen.
Well, if I had any belief that game is actually going to happen, I'd start poking around, but – like. These
ain't gonna happen.
Teams, they ain't playing those games anymore. They're just not going to.
No, I'm gonna say it. We can do that on Salt Creek. Ride the boat from Salt Creek down towards the stadium. The boat show.
Oh, yeah. Not bad, not bad. Are you allowed to put boats in there? I'm not sure you are. Not sure.
Kayak.
Can you? Okay.
A little kayak show. Radio kayak show.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do they got some AC outlets on the creek bank? I'm not sure that they
do. No. Yeah. They don't. It's battery only. Hmm. Bogues, what's happening with Counter Reed? What's on the docket here around the corner?
Yeah, continuing to gear up for spring game, which finally feels a little bit close now. Kind of taking big looks the past couple of weeks at defense and special teams. So I think I'm finally going to rip the Band-Aid off and try and make heads or tails of Nebraska's offense for 2024, where it needs to get to, where it is realistically probably going to shake out. So have one of those coming. And then, of course, I think the big thing next week is like once the portal opens, it'll be interesting to see with Nebraska. I don't think you'll have a ton of activity in terms of departures. Well, practice is still going on, but who knows? But I'll be interested from a broad college football perspective to see how crazy this go around is and see who's hopping in.
Folks, appreciate it. And folks can subscribe, correct? How do they do that?
Yeah, just head to counterread.com. We've got about half and half mix of stories that are free and open to everyone. And then some subscriber only stories. So you can head to counterread.com, check it out. Should be able to read a handful of pieces before hopping in. And you can be a free subscriber. You'll just get the stuff we put out there for free subscribers. And if you want all of it, we'd love to have paid subscribers join us too.
I think you want all of it is what I'm saying. Brandon Vogel at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter, counterread.com. Vogues, you take care. Thanks for the time this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
There he is, Brandon Vogel.
Topo Chico for Brandon. We got to send him a care package.